Maybe things were worse than we thought.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiotakis. It's the morning open, a look at the economy as markets open and start trading for the week. Let's ask that question, where's Wall Street? Markets are up right now. The S&P up about 0.6%. The NASDAQ up more than 0.5% right now as well. The Dow up about 31 points at 95.18. Markets in Europe are up barely, and in Asia, shares closed lower today. Sam Stovall is Chief Investment Strategist at S&P Equity Research. He's with us live in New York. Morning, Sam.
Morning, Steve.
So we hear from the noted economist Nouriel Roubini. This is the guy who predicted the financial crisis, that the stock market has come, you know, too far, too fast. Now, you know, we've got a couple of things going on here. We had this, this unemployment report from Friday, right, from the Labor Department, that still a lot of people are without a job. But that maybe is trending better. And then you got the stock market that's shot up, what, 40 or 50% since March. What's going on here?
Well, the stock market tends to like to climb a wall of worry, and certainly it has a new worry now that Professor Roubini says that we're due for some sort of correction. Corrections really are nothing new in new bull markets. What I find actually encouraging is that the stock market tends to advance an average of 36% in the 12 months after we get that initial meaningful correction in a new bull market.
I want to talk, Sam, about this audit out today from the Bank Bailout Watchdog Group. It says things weren't near as rosy when the Treasury and Fed were shoring up the big banks during the financial crisis last fall. Some of these banks that got money weren't as healthy as the government had us believe. Why am I not surprised about this? And doesn't this create some sort of credibility problem now?
Well, if it's true, I would say yes, that there would certainly be a credibility gap going forward. I can understand how during the nadir of this confidence or crisis of confidence that our leaders would try to put as positive a spin on things and not add to the fear. But then the next time that we do need the government to step in and tell us that things are okay, I think we probably will take their comments with a big grain of salt.
All right. Sam Stovall from New York. Sam, thanks.
Welcome.
The people who bring you Consumer Reports magazine are getting into the healthcare debate now. They have a TV ad airing in Washington starting today, and it's the first time the group's produced an ad on a policy issue. Marketplace's Tamara Keith reports.
The message in the ad is pretty simple, and it's something we've heard a lot lately. Healthcare is expensive, and many people are just one pink slip or illness away from losing their coverage.
Washington, the time for healthcare reform is now.
Jim Guest, president of Consumers Union, who is featured in the ad, says it's aimed at bringing the perspective of consumers into the debate.
The idea is to really try to reach policymakers in Washington at this crucial moment when they're making decisions to go forward or not.
But there are already plenty of other interest groups on the airwaves. Evan Tracy of the Campaign Media Analysis Group says that will make it hard for Consumers Union to break through.
I think right now, for the people that are being exposed to this advertising the most, it's a confusing environment, to say the least.
He says nationwide, various groups are spending about $1 million a day on ads related to health care. In Washington, I'm Tamara Keith for Marketplace.
You're listening to The Morning Report for Monday, October 5th, 2009, at Marketplace.org. Hundreds of pilots are staging a protest at airports across the European Union today. The pilots are handing out fake boarding passes to passengers, which carry a health warning. The long flying hours are putting lives at risk. Marketplace European correspondent Stephen Beard reports.
The pilots say that in the scramble to cut costs, airlines are working their crews longer and jeopardizing safety. They blame the European regulators for not tightening the rules on flying hours. At the moment, air crews are permitted to work up to 14 hours a day, and they can be expected to fly for 60 hours a week for 3 weeks in a row. That's not a reassuring prospect for passengers, says Philippe von Schoppenthaler, one of the organizers of today's protest.
I don't know whether you would want to be on board of a plane where the pilot is just at the end of the third week and at the end of this third 60-hour working week.
He says there's clear scientific evidence that these long hours cause pilot fatigue, a factor in at least 15% of air accidents. The European Air Safety Regulator says it's studying a scientific report on the issue and will finalise new rules by the year 2011. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Bank of America CEO Ken Lewis may already be packing boxes, but a cloud remains over his head no matter how far from North Carolina he gets. His legal battles could flare up as soon as this week. Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson reports.
The trouble stems from Bank of America's takeover of the investment bank Merrill Lynch last fall. Specifically, what Ken Lewis and other execs knew about Merrill bonuses and losses, and why that information wasn't passed on to B of A shareholders before they voted to approve the deal. Securities lawyer Bill Singer says Lewis is in the unenviable position of being the face of Bank of America.
I think the problem that Mr. Lewis has is while typically you would be mad at the institution, given that he had such a high-profile presence on the news, unfortunately for him, he really personalized much of the anger.
Anger that's being channeled by attorneys general around the country. New York's AG says just because Lewis is stepping down doesn't mean he won't be investigated. Lewis also faces scrutiny in North Carolina and a class action lawsuit in Ohio. And Lewis may find himself in federal court when B of A faces SEC charges in February. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
Today kicks off the annual conference of ER doctors, and the American College of Emergency Physicians has a lot to talk about. One of the main topics under the microscope will be healthcare reform and how it could affect emergency rooms. Ashley Milne-Tite has more.
We hear a lot about the uninsured using emergency rooms for routine care. Dr. Angela Gardner says that's a myth. She's president of the American College of Emergency Physicians. She says the vast majority of people who come to the ER need urgent care that regular doctors can't provide. Cutting the number of people in the ER is not the answer to cutting costs, as she says some lawmakers think.
And the truth is, all of emergency care spending in America is only 3% of the total yearly healthcare spending.
She says the overcrowding in the emergency room is really a symptom of something else. Hospitals don't have enough beds to accommodate ER patients needing follow-up care, and processing takes too long. She says although affordable coverage is necessary, it won't solve the crowding. Since Massachusetts adopted universal health care, trips to the emergency room are up 7%. I'm Ashley Milne-Tite for Marketplace.
In the first days of fiscal 2010 for the U.S. government, so expect some budget deficit figures to be thrown around for fiscal 2009. And my, how the politics have changed. Fortune Magazine's Alan Sloan is with us to talk about it. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Steve.
So how do they come up with these numbers?
Well, there are actually two sets of numbers.
Okay.
The first set is the number almost everybody uses, $1.6 trillion, which will be the official deficit number. And then there's the number I use and a few other aged cranks who care about things. And our number is roughly $2 trillion.
All right. Now, that's a big difference between those two numbers. That's $400 billion difference.
God, you're quick.
Thank
yes.
you.
Yes. And the difference is about $200 billion of the Social Security surplus, which consists of the government borrowing money from Social Security taxpayers, reduces the deficit, but not to me. And then there's about another $200 billion of interest the government pays that, for reasons I don't want to go into, don't really count in the deficit.
I can remember a time, Alan, when we were talking about budget deficits. We were talking $200, $300, $400 billion. I mean, there was none of this $1-some-odd trillion. I mean, are we in uncharted territory, and is this really bad?
Well, I think it's really bad. What you're going to start hearing is two sets of things, one of which is going to be, well, as a percentage of the economy, this number is only about half the deficits we had during World War II, so they really don't matter. That's going to be one set. And the other set is going to say, the end of the world is at hand.
Well, okay, but end of the world aside, I mean, what do we expect?
Well, if this doesn't stop, and I don't think it will, we're going to discover that the rest of the world is going to want higher interest rates to lend money to the United States than it now is demanding. And a lot of this money that we're paying in interest basically leaves the country, as opposed to, say, World War II, where the deficits as a percent of the economy were much bigger, but we financed them pretty much inside the country. So the interest payments that the government was making stayed inside the country, and the money was recycled. Now it's going to leave. And that is not a good thing.
Fortune Magazine's Alan Sloan joining us this morning. Alan, thanks.
You're welcome, Steve.
And finally, this could be just what the kids want for the backyard, if you have an acre or two and $6 million burning a hole in your pocket. A fossilized Tyrannosaurus rex didn't get picked up at auction over the weekend in Vegas. Bids were too low. Experts say the bones represent more than half of the skeleton of the 40-foot-long beast that lived so many years ago. Buy it, and you're sure to scare off that pterodactyl that just won't stop crowing. By the way, more about that later on Marketplace with Kai Ryssdal. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiotakis. Have a great day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.